I want to preface what I have to say by reading a few words from the father of our country, George Washington. He said, "I have always considered marriage as the most interesting event of one's life, the foundation of happiness or misery." I hope none of you here today have made such a bad choice in marriage that yours is the foundation of misery, but there are such people as that in the world, as the divorce courts attest. Some sections of our great country were told that divorce is now almost equal the marriages. That should impress us with the responsibility of choosing well our companions when we enter into marriage and of trying to help our children to do that very thing. I give you a few words from the Apostle Paul on that particular subject. He said, "I have ought no, be ye not unequally yoked together. For what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness, and what communion hath light with darkness?" We should seek to help our children to be equally yoked together. They have things in common, that they have the kind of faith, that they're righteous, and then when you try to match a righteous person with an unrighteous person, you could just as well try to mix oil and water. They just don't mix. Sometimes they don't know that until after they're married. I give you a little statement from the Doctrine and Covenants. "For intelligence cleaveth unto intelligence, wisdom receiveth wisdom, truth embraceth truth, virtue loveth virtue, light cleaveth unto light, mercy hath compassion on mercy, and claimeth her own." And then there's more to it, but I stop at that point. Now, to illustrate my thinking, when I was president of the Southern States Mission, a young lady came to me at the close of one of our conference meetings in Florida, and she said, "President Richards, I'm going to get married. What do you think of that?" And I said, "Well, do I know him? No. Is he a member of the church? No." "Well," then I said, "I want to say something to you." "Now," I said, "you're a beautiful, clean, lovely woman. You love the Lord. You love His church. You could no more be happy with an unclean man than you can mix oil and water." Now, I said, I didn't dare tell her down there she couldn't marry out of the church, because I didn't know where she'd marry if I did. The only other chance was the Mormon elders, and we had hands-off signs hanging all over them so that there was no place to send her to get a man in the church. Now, I said, "In your courtship with him, you will know whether he's clean or not. You'll know whether he's motivated by high and holy and righteous desires." And I said, "If he is," I said, "then you can go a little further." And I said, "Then he should be willing to let you raise your children in the church, because knowing as you do that the Lord has restored his truth to the earth in this day, you'd be a very unhappy woman if you were not privileged to raise your children in the church." And then I said, "He must be a prayerful man, because as wicked as the world is today, I wouldn't trust any man to be true to his wife and his family unless he believes that there's a God, and that someday he'll have to answer to God for the things that he does here in this life." Now, I said, "Then let me know when he joins the church, as I'll be very interested." I didn't hear anything from her till the next conference. About 4 months later, she came in during the morning session late. The train was late. At the close of the meeting, she came up and reached out her hand, and I said, "Name, please." "Oh, I'm still Miss So-and-so." "Well, what became of the marriage?" "He didn't come up to your specifications." And I told that story over in Alabama a few months after that. And at the close of the meeting, a little 17-year-old girl came up to me and said, "Brother Richards, If I'd have heard that story 6 months ago, I'd have been an unmarried woman today. It didn't take that little 17-year-old Mormon girl very long to know that you couldn't mix righteousness with unrighteousness, virtue with unvirtue, and so forth, and that you have to be equally yoked together. Now, we have conditions like that wherever we go. We meet our young people. They come up and want to get acquainted with us. I was down in Arizona just recently, attended the Religion and Life Week at the University there, Tucson. And I was asked to speak in one of the departments on marriage and the home and courtship. And I told those young people that one of the greatest requisites to a happy home was spiritual equality, because spirituality has produced the greatest music, the greatest literature, the greatest art, and the greatest people. And when the home is divided on spiritual matters, you cannot expect the best to come out of it. And so I said, Catholics should marry Catholics. Baptists should marry Baptists. Mormons should marry Mormons. When I was in California, president of the state, I was sitting in my office one day and a young lady came in selling neckties. She said, I guess you don't remember me, do you, Brother Richards? And I said, no, I don't believe I do. Who are you? She said, I used to teach Sunday school under you up in the 27th Ward in Salt Lake. And when she told me that, I remembered who she was. I said, now what's the rest of the story? Well, she said, I fell in love. I fell in love with a Catholic boy. And she said, I didn't think it'd make any difference to the Lord how I worshiped him, as long as I worshiped him. So I agreed to go with him all the way. And we were married by the priest. And I agreed to raise my children in the Catholic Church. And she said, I went with him to his meetings and went through their exercises. And she said, now we have 3 children. Just the other day, she said, I said to him, I'm the biggest hypocrite in all the world. I don't believe a thing that's going on in your church. I don't know what's going to become of you or me or the children, but I'm going back to my church. No, you can't run away from God, and you can't build happy homes on homes that are divided spiritually. I was in Chicago attending a conference, and there was a little woman with a baby in her arms sitting down on about the 3rd row, and closed the meeting, she came up and said, Brother Richards, I'd like to meet you. I said, I can't think of anything I'd rather do than to meet you. And then the tears started rolling down her cheeks. And I said, you're a Western girl, aren't you? She couldn't speak. She just nodded. I said, and you married out of the church. And I got another nod. And I said, and your husband doesn't like you to go to church. And I got another nod. And I said, and you're homesick. Homesick for your church and your people. With that, she dropped down on the front bench, covered her face in the shawl, and wept like her little heart had break. You see, if you're going to marry, as the president of the great nation said, into happiness or misery, one of the first requisites is that you marry within the church, so that there will be equality in the home. Now, along that line, I want to give you a few words from Moses. Moses was speaking to the people and told the people of his day why they should marry within their own group and not marry with the other tribes. And this is what he said. Neither shalt thou make marriage with them. Thy daughter thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son. For they will turn away thy son from following me, so will the anger of the Lord be kindled. Now, just a little illustration. A woman came in my office one day, brokenhearted. Her boy was in the armed forces. He married a little girl down in California. He wrote his mother and said, the reason I married her mother was because she was so much like you. And she feigned an interest in the church. But as soon as they were married, that interest all disappeared. And when the first Christmas time came around, notwithstanding the fact that that boy had never used tobacco, his Christmas present from his wife was a carton of cigarettes, a pipe, and some tobacco to go with it. She did everything she could to lead him away from following after the Lord according to the things that had been taught unto her. Now I want to, those of you who have married out of the church, if any of them are here, that doesn't mean you should abandon your husbands. Some of them have been successful in bringing their husbands into the church, many of them. I was in the stake of Zion just recently, and the president had made a survey over 10 years of the members of his stake who'd married out of the church. And out of that group, 30% of them only had been successful in bringing their husbands into the church. The other 70% were still living with conditions that are not favorable to happy home life and proper rearing of children. When people marry out of the church, they shouldn't only think of themselves. They ought to think of their unborn children and what it means for them to have to grow up in divided homes. But if any of you happen to have so married, I give you the words of the Apostle Paul when he said, "For the unbelieving husband is sanctified by his wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband." So that there have been cases where these unbelievers have been brought into the church. I tell you one little story about a man who served twice now as a state president. He told me this story himself. He was from the East. He fell in love with one of our Mormon girls. He was a man of refinement and culture, and when he wrote home and told his people what he'd done, they were terribly perturbed to think that he would marry a Mormon girl. He wrote back and said, "Don't let that disturb you. I'll knock all those crazy ideas out of her mind in a few weeks." Well, when he told me the story, he was president of the Stake of Zion. Found out he wasn't quite as good a knocker as the little girl that he married. Now, I think that in many cases, those who have married out of the church could win their companions to the church, provided they have the faith and the courage to live their religion religiously after they marry. But it's when they're weaned away and go into the ways of the one that they've married that they're unsuccessful along this line. Now, since you expected to hear from the president of the church, I'd like to give you a few words from President Stephen L. Richards. He has written on the home and the family in the most beautiful way and talked. I think that that's a pet theme of his, and so I would like to read you just a few words that he has to say about this great principle. "What is a home in the sight of God? I take the liberty of offering my own definition. I define home as being a divinely appointed institution in which a servant and handmaiden of the Lord prepare themselves in righteousness to receive chosen spirits coming from the eternal Father and give them bodies in the flesh for mortal probation, and then undertake with all the power at their command to lead these spirit children entrusted to their care back into the presence of God from whence they came. They shall reach the lofty station of the celestial kingdom where God and Christ dwell, and theirs shall be the transcendently high privilege to have eternal family relationship, perpetuating the seed forever and ever, and thus most nearly approach the exalted status of our Father and His Son." And then this oft-repeated statement of his, "Our heaven is little more than projection of the sacred institutions of our home into the eternities." Now, of course, I don't think the Latter-day Saints understand the value of temple marriages. Those of you who've been know that over the altar in the holy temple, men and women are sealed together for time and for all eternity, and they have sealed upon them kingdoms, thrones, principalities, powers, dominions, and exaltations, blessings that couldn't be purchased with all the wealth of the world. No wonder Jesus said that the gospel was the pearl of great price, and one seeking costly pearls sells all else that he has in order that he might be able to acquire. These words that I've quoted are not idle words. They're not idle tales. They are the things that are sealed by that power that Jesus gave to his 12 when he said, "All power is given to me in heaven and upon earth. Whatsoever," and he said, "as my Father has sent me, so send I you." He said, "You have not chosen me, but I have chosen you and ordained you. And whatsoever ye shall bind on earth shall be bound in heaven," and so forth. Now that's the power that's operative in these holy temples that bind young people together for time and for all eternity. Now coming back to the statement of President Washington, it's either happiness or misery. And I don't think it'd be amiss if I should just refer to a few practical things that have occurred in my life. For instance, I was raised in a good home. My mother and father didn't quarrel. And I thought all you'd have to do would be to find a pretty girl and marry her, and it'd be heaven on earth. And then I left home, and I came in the city to board to go to school. And I left a number of boarding houses because I just couldn't take it to listen to husbands and wives quarrel and nag at each other till I came to feel that an irritable man or an irritable woman was about as objectionable creature as I know anything of in this world. I think a man or a woman who has an irritable disposition ought to get down on their knees and ask God the Eternal Father in all earnestness to give him the power to overcome such a wicked habit as that, just as much as they would to overcome the habit of liquor or tobacco, because it can do more to wreck a home than anything I know of. You've heard the story about the man who lived to be so old that the newspapers interviewed him to see how he accounted for it. "Well," he said, "when my wife and I married, we decided that we would never quarrel, that if we ever started to quarrel, that I should step outdoors." He says, "The result is that I've lived nearly all my life out in the open air." Now I tell these young people when I marry them in the temple that there just isn't any use of quarreling or arguing with their wives. Their wives are always right, and the man can never get the best of the argument. So I tell them the first requisite in their home is to find out where the door is. And then when an argument starts, that they step outside until they both cooled off so that they'll not have this bickering with each other. It can be the most pitiful thing. Now the home. Where there's love, where there's cheerfulness, where there's good feeling, that's the kind of a home that really counts. One of our great statesmen was asked once, "What kind of a man so-and-so was? Is he a Christian?" He says, "I don't know. I've never seen him in his home. It isn't just what we are on the street. It isn't what we are in the office. It's what we are in the home that determines. I've seen men who wouldn't walk 25 miles to attend the funeral of their own parents because there'd never been such a thing as love in the home. I've seen other homes. I remember one boy said to me, if I didn't believe there was a God, if I didn't believe that there was an eternal life, if I didn't believe that I'd ever have to answer for the things I do here in this life, I'd still do the things that I'm doing because of my love and my respect for my Father. I don't think a father can bequeath anything to his children, not by way of money or means or wealth. That would mean anything like what it means to bequeath to their children an honorable name, so that the boys and the girls can say and point with pride, "He's my father," or "She's my mother." I think that's the most important thing in life, that we so live our lives. Now, pardon me for being personal, but I went in my father's little apartment shortly before he died. He was nearly 90. He got up out of his chair, walked over toward me, put his big arms around me as if I'd have been his little boy. And calling me by my kid name, he says, "Grandy, my boy, I love you." You know you can't get away from love like that. And that's the way it's been all through our life, until it wasn't anything to do the right thing. Like I said to one of our boys when he came home from the Navy, and when you hear the stories of the things that he saw, the companionship that he was in, the wickedness that surrounded him, then I said to him, probably your mother and I haven't been as expressive as we should have been of our appreciation of the fact that you came home clean. "Well, Dad," he says, "you don't need to thank me." He said, "All I had to do was to think of you and Mother and my brothers and sisters, and I want to be like you." You know what a boy or a girl takes with them when they leave the parental home? The door, no matter where they go, is the thing that's going to determine what kind of men and women they're going to be. And as parents, we're the ones who have to set the standard of that home and the influence of it. I was intrigued during the war to read a little article in the Reader's Digest. You may all have read it, about a young Mormon boy in the service who was carrying his watch showing Utah time. And his buddies kidded him about it. Said, "Why don't you set your watch so you'll know what's going on in the world?" And holding that watch in his hand, he said something like this: "That watch tells me what time Father's getting out in the morning to take care of the cattle. Tells me what time Mother's getting the hot cakes ready for breakfast. What time they're kneeling in family prayer. And when they're getting ready to go to church." Now, what do your children take with you when they go out of the home? Is there something that ties them there, that gives them the fortitude and the backbone to live up to the high standards of the home? I think of my own father. One time I was planning on going off into a new state. You see, I'm old enough to have grown up with some of these states. Father started warning me about what kind of company I might fall into, and then turning to me, he said, "But why should I talk to you like that?" "Why," he said, "I'd trust you anywhere I go myself." And you know, when my father said that to me, it was just like running a steel rod up my back. I figured that as long as I had the confidence of that father of mine, I'd never let him down. And I've tried to trust my boys that way. I believe in the checkup system. When they don't know you're checking up on them, that's a little fatherly advice on the side. I could tell you a few things about that too, but I'll not take time to do that. Now, brothers and sisters, the old prophet said that we should train up the child the way she should go in the days of his youth. And when he becomes old, he will not depart therefrom. And that training can't come from the church or from anywhere as effectively as it can out of our homes. And love, you know, we read in Holy Writ that God is love, that he so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son for us. And when I was a boy, I remember we used to travel to go down to the old Garfield Beach, and on the way back and forth to the midnight hours, we'd sing, "'Tis love. 'Tis love that makes the world go around." And I want to tell you that it's love that makes homes what they really ought to be. We'll perpetuate them into the eternal worlds. And if there's no love in home, how then can we look forward with gladness to a perpetuation and extension of our homes into the eternal worlds? I give you one little thought along that line. I tried to teach the principle of celestial marriage when I was on a mission back in New Bedford, Massachusetts, to one woman, and she said, "Well, I'll tell you, Mr. Richards, if there's any marriage relationship in the next world, she says, I'll take chances on getting something better than I've got here. She said, if I can live with him till I die, I think I will have done pretty well." Now, there isn't time for any more. I got to close. But I want to just leave you this thought. This was the June 8th, I think, church section of the news. This Bergeson family from Shelley, who was named the family, the American family of the year, down in Miami Beach, of all the states of the Union represented. He's a bishop's counselor up in Shelley. And the outstanding thing that passed the decision in favor of this family was their home night, where they gathered their little children around them and where they planted in their hearts the love of God and the love of the home. Now, God bless you all. Help you to help your children. Help each other. Be good to each other. No more divorces. Learn how to give and take and live together the way the Lord would have you live, so that the home, the thought of home, projected into the eternal worlds, will be the most desirable thing that could come in your life. Now, since Sister Richards is here, some of the children, it doesn't do to boast of them, but I've lived with that little woman now for nearly 50 years, and I tell you in all truth that during those 50 years, there's never been anybody's companionship in my idle hours or hours that I was not occupied that's meant to me what her companionship has been. I'd rather be with her. And I just can't visualize a heaven that could be heaven without her and these wonderful girls and the boys and their companions and the children. I tell you, no people in all the world have such a philosophy and such an ideal to live for as we Latter-day Saints. God help us to prepare the kingdom that He has prepared, that He has promised us, that we'll be ready for the fulfillment of His promises. I pray and leave you my love and blessing in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.